We're holding on page two in Eruvin. It may instead be marked by you as page 154. Looks like the printers couldn't decide whether they want to restart the numbering or not. Anyway, so we're holding near the bottom of that page, the last or next to last line, middle of Os Vez. So we were talking about how Bes Hillel and Bes Shammai, and how Elu ve'Elu Divrei Elokim Chayim, but in most cases the halacha is like Bes Hillel, and we said the reason is because they're nochin va'aluvin. They're easygoing, and they're willing to accept when people are chutzpahdik or insulting to them and not answer back. So the Gemara continues, v'lamdecha, so this comes to teach you, shekala mashbilas atzmai, anybody who lowers himself, who allows himself to be low, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Magdiyai, then Hashem will raise him up. As we see here, Bes Hillel was nirchin va'aluvin, and the result is that the halacha is usually established like them. And vice versa, if a person raises himself up, then Hashem will put him down. Also, when a person is constantly on the lookout for greatness, for he wants people to consider him great and honor him or whatever, then the greatness runs away from him and he doesn't manage to achieve it. And vice versa, if he runs away from greatness, then greatness goes and seeks him out. And a third point, anybody who pushes the time, meaning Rashi says he works and overworks himself to become rich or to become great or whatever. He sees he's not, but he keeps on taking risks and going on far trips and whatever. So instead of, in other words, the idea would be you could have a person who says, you know, the time will come when it comes. I'm not gonna try to rush things. I'm not gonna try to force things. Versus a derech hashah is somebody who doesn't do that. Is somebody who tries to force the thing to happen as soon as possible. So the result is shah dechatoi. The time ends up pushing him. In other words, he ends up not really ever necessarily finding the good time to accomplish what he was after. And when a person allows himself to be pushed by the time, again meaning that he's willing to let things go as Hashem decides and not try to push it too much, then the time stands on his behalf, meaning eventually there will come the time when he's going to be successful and Hashem will make sure that happens. So why the triple expression? Marshall says that we have, and Marshall talks about this in many places in his writings, you have three aspects of goodness that a person has. We just had actually something about it at the end of Shabbos that he mentioned. A person needs to be totally, he mentioned it in connection with the three, a person is made up of his father's component and his mother's and Hashem's. And furthermore, so you have a person has to be good to Hashem and good to other people and good to himself. So then these three things over here, the first one is Magdiya or Mashbel Atzmo, which relates to his connection with Hashem. Then the second one is as far as Tov L'Briyos. So when he's looking for greatness, he's looking that he should be able to be great and then overpower and dominate people versus when he doesn't. And the third one is, then if he tries to do that, then Dula runs away from him and he never achieves it. In fact, the Gemara says that a person who's a Baal Gaiva, even his own family can't stand him. And vice versa, when he doesn't do that, then Dula goes after him and people are accepting and friendly towards him. As far as Tov L'Atzmai is the Derchikas Hashah versus Hashah Dechaktoi, we just learned at the end of Shabbos about Mazel Shah, about the Mazel of the different hours of the day. So now when a person tries to push it, I don't care whether it's the time for this particular mazel, I'm gonna push my luck anyway, then it doesn't work out for him. Whereas when he allows himself to be pushed because of that, and because he davens to Hashem for tremendous rachamim, then Hashem will make it possible for him to even overpower what would have been the mazel of that time, like we had by Avraham Avinu, where Hashem told him, I'll move Tzedek for your sake. So that's the three things, says Marsha. Okay. Since we're talking about going back to, and even Yaakov points out another point in it as well, you have three different stages in a person's life. You have when a person, or not necessarily stages in a person's life, but you have three different reasons why a person might try to become elevated over people. There might be his own qualities, there might be his family's qualities, and there might be that he figures I'll become rich and then people will honor me because of my riches. And each one of those, then if he's doing it like that, then it's not necessarily going to work out. Then it's not necessarily going to work out. Whereas if he leaves it in Hashem's hands, then it'll work. The Gemara continues. Turning up on Shdei Shonim Umechta Nechaku B'Shamay B'Sivol. For 2.5 years, B'Shamay and B'Sivol were arguing. Now we learned before, we said they were arguing in general on all of the various halachas for 3.5 years. But within that, they had maybe at the same time, maybe a different time, they were arguing for 2.5 years on this one point. Halalu Oimim Noach Lo Adam Shalay Nivra Yosim Shenivra. One group said B'Sivol B'Pashtus. Said it would have been easier for a person. It would have been better for a person, not better, but easier for a person if he had not been. This is the Shammai actually saying if he had not been created, than if he had been created. It would have been easier on him. Whereas the Sillah said, "Noach lo adam shenivra yosim mishlo nivra." A person is. It's easier for him that he was created more than he wasn't created. So Nimru v'Gomru. Eventually, they took a vote on it, and they decided sort of a compromise. Noyach lo la'odim shel nivra yosim shenivra. It is true, like the Shammai said, that a person would have been noyach. It would have been easier for a person if he had not been created. But achshav shenivra. But now, having been created, yifashfish b'maisa. We should check carefully in his deeds. Rashi explains yifashfish would mean anything that he did already, he should be doing a careful analysis of what he did and where he could have done better. The Amulah, some say Yamashmish for myself, that he should check around. Your fashmish literally means like to search. Yamashmish means to handle and to so that means Rashi says more when he's doing when you have the Shas Maisa, then he should consider, for example, Hefsid Mitzvah Keneged Schara and Schara Beira Keneged Afseda, like it says in Pirkei Avos. So your Fashmish Maisa would be to do a Cheshbon HaNefesh of what he did previously. Yamashmish Maisa would be proactively, before he's going to do something, consider the pros and cons of it and then based on that act appropriately. Tosfos points out that there's a different Gemara in Avodah Zarah that says we should be grateful to our ancestors who worship the ego, actually, because if not for them, we wouldn't exist. Because by Matan Torah, death, the Jewish people weren't supposed to die anymore. And if that had been the case, then there would be no need for us to exist, because our ancestors from the time of Matan Torah would still exist now. Because they worship the ego, the result is they die, and therefore they're eventually replaced by us. So you see from that Gemara that a person should be grateful to be born. So first of all, the Gemara says over there, it means not necessarily that we wouldn't have been born, but that we wouldn't be very worthwhile. We wouldn't be very worthwhile in the world by comparison with our ancestors who are on such a high level. Compared to them, we'd be nothing. So that's first of all. But second of all, Tosfos says, here we're talking about before a person was created, before a person is born. You don't know how he's going to end up. Sure, once a person was created and already has mitzvahs, then of course even the Shammai is going to agree that it's a good thing that he was born. And a third thing, Tosfos says, another meaning can also be that, again, similar idea. You know, the regular run-of-the-mill people, the regular run of people, yeah, you can say, Noyach lo la'adam shenivra m'shalon nivra. Tzaddik, of course, shalon nivra. Tzaddik, of course, is different. He accomplishes a lot. Marshah in Makkos refers to something else. He refers over here to his Pidush in Makkos, where he explains like this. Fundamentally, the question was, on the one hand, the Eibishter put us into the world to do mitzvah saseh. On the other hand, we have mitzvah lois saseh to stay away from. So, which is the more paramount one? On the one hand, a person can accomplish so much good and so much, and then bring so much kedusha and energy from Hashem into the world through doing mitzvah saseh. On the other hand, a person can destroy the world with mitzvah lois saseh. So which is the more important thing? So they finally, he says, Nimnu v'gamru doesn't just mean they voted, as in they counted the number of chachamim on each side of the issue. Nimnu means they actually counted the number of mitzvahs. How many mitzvahs are there, and how many mitzvahs lois haseh are there? And they found out there are more lois haseh than esahs. So that being the case, then, noyach lo la'adam shalanivra, a person would have been better off not being born, because then, like this, there's more of a chance for him to mess up. But now that he's already in the world, then yafashvish and yamashvish for myself, then he should at least, yafashvish for myself then would mean, And so those two, your fashmish and your mashmish, would mean the mitzvahs are say and the mitzvahs lois are say, respectively, to be careful to check through the mitzvahs lois are say and make sure he's not violating them, and to check through the mitzvahs are say and make sure that he's doing them the way he's supposed to. It's like a philosophy, right? They still have to vote on it because it's an important thing for a yid to know which one is better. There are other points in it as well. The Ritva over here, it's brought over here, and Ein Yaakov brings another point. He's somewhat similar to Rashi that your fashbish and your mashmish are ovar and osid, but he says particularly, we find, for example, when a person has Yisurim come on him, the Gemara says in Brachas, you fashbish for Meisim, we should check through his Meisim and see what he did wrong that makes him deserving of these Yisurim. Whereas your Mashmish, again, like Rashi says, would be more careful to be more careful for the future. So it's similar to Rashi, but showing other ways of representing that point. There is, now in Chassidus it talks about, the Alter Rebbe brings in the Lechuta Torah, now there is a big question that a lot of Mefoshim have, how even could Beis Shammai say, Noyach Lo Adam Shel Nivra? What are you're saying that Hashem did something wrong over here in creating humanity? That Hashem would have been better off for Hashem not to create, for Hashem not to create us, and then what's going on? And there's a lot of discussion about it. The Alter Rebbe points out in the Lechuta Torah, you notice the Lashon is not Toiv Lo Adam Shel Nivra. Because of course, you can't say it would have been good for a person to not be created. Like this, the best good is what Hashem did, which is to create us. What it means is Noyach in the sense that after all, the neshama was before it was sent down here to earth is on the highest level. It's tachas kisei covered. It's being sent down over here for avodas abirurim. It would have been noyach. It would have been much easier on it. It would have been it would have been much easier for the neshama if it was able to stay up there rather than having to come down here. Instead, Hashem sent it down here in order to accomplish avodas abirurim. So now, but ultimately, the Shammai is saying that the Shammai would have had an easier time of it if it had just been able to stay up there. There's a sikh, actually, where the Rebbe talks about, in general, you have many places in Shas that Rebbe points out where the Shammai and the Sibyl's arguments boil down to B'koyach versus B'koyol. What do we look at? The potential or the actuality? The Shammai tends to look at the potential. We know, for example, famously by Hanukkah, that's why they say you start with 8 candles and work your way down to 1, and the soul looks at the actuality, how many days have already been achieved, and therefore they go from 1 to 8. So in the same vein over here, the Shammai looks at the potential. There's so much of a potential for messing up, and therefore they're saying, Noyach Lo Adam Shel Nivra. Whereas Vesil is looking at the actuality of what a person is able to accomplish, and therefore they focus on that side of it. But anyway, so again, in the Lechuta Torah over there, it explains that the vort is that there's a Noyach Lo Adam. A person would have had an easier time of it if his neshama hadn't been sent down to the world, but now that it is, then he has the job of accomplishing Avodas Abirim. Further on in the Perek, it talks about, it's still talking about this din of the Korah, of the one way to make it you're allowed to carry in a Mavui is to have a horizontal beam running across the front of the Mavui. So the rule is that beam has to be at least a tefach wide. And so the Mishnah describes what happens if it's round in cross section. The idea is the Mishnah describes it has to be the reason a tefach wide is so you should be able to put a brick of a certain size on it. Because in principle, the idea, in theory, you don't actually have to do this in actuality, but in theory, the idea would be that the koda would be like you'd put a row of bricks on it and make like a permanent doorway for the mother. So it has to be a tefach wide, and so the Mishnah describes what happens if it's round in cross section. So the Mishnah gives you a formula: if it's three tefachim in circumference around the thickness of it, then you know that it's a tefach wide. So that's the famous ratio pi. Now it's actually a little more than that. It's actually a little less than 3 1/7. It's an irrational number, no matter what figure the Gemara would have given for it, it wouldn't be exact anyhow. So Rishonim explained, the Rosh explained, and other Rishonim explained that the halacha is we're allowed to rely on that even though it's inexact, even where that results in a kula. So for example, it comes up here, it comes up in connection with the halachas of a sukkah and in various other areas in halacha where even though, so you'll have, let's say this, you'll have this beam that's 3 tefachim around and that means the diameter is going to be a bit less than 1 tefach. Nevertheless, that's good enough and the chachamim will allow you to approximate it like that. And the same thing with a round sukkah and the various other dinim. Anyway, the Gemara brings, that we have a source for it in a pasuk. We find by the Yamshel Shloimeh, there was a big mikveh made out of copper that Shloimeh HaMelech built in the first base of Mikdash. The Yerushalmi elsewhere explains how exactly, I mean, on the face of it, you can't turtle inside a keli, but it was made in a certain way. It was made with a very ingenious engineering design so that it was actually a kosher mikveh. So the point is, the pasuk describes it was 10 amos in diameter and 30 amos in circumference. So therefore, you see, there's your 1-3 ratio. Now, even though, you know, like Mara says, you could argue, for example, that maybe one measurement is on the inside and the other one is on the outside. So the Gemara says no, because the rim of it was actually very thin. But still, the point is, the very fact that the pasuk phrases it that way, and you think of it, if it was 10 amos across, you measure around it, it would have been over 31 amos in circumference. And, you know, why is it approximating only to 30? Is to teach us this halacha that the ratio 3-1 is acceptable in halacha. Anyway, so that leads the Gemara into the following discussion. Toni Rabchia, Yamsha Osa Shloimeh, this Yamsha Shloimeh, this big mikveh, this big copper tank that he made, Hoyamachzik Kuf Nun Mikvatara. It fit as much water as 150 regular mikvahs. So a regular mikveh is 40 sa, so it means this one could hold 6,000 sa of water. A saw is somewhere around two and a half gallons of water. So you're talking this thing could hold, like 15,000 gallons or something. Anyway, so the Gemara asks, let's figure that out. Mechti mikveh kamahavi, let's figure it out. A regular mikveh is how much aboim saw. Kiditanya, and we know that because we learn in a brisa when it says v'rochatz es besorei b'mayim, the pasuk says about various tmeim that they should wash their flesh in water, and that means b'mei mikveh. So that means b'mayim doesn't just mean any water; it means the water of a mikveh. And when it says kol besorei, mean when it says all his flesh, means mayim shekol gufoi oil b'hen. It has to be enough water that his entire body will fit into it. The kamahin, so how much is that? Amal ama brum sholish amas. One ama by one ama, which is the cross section of the human body, by three amas tall. There are in various places in Shas where Rashi and Tosfos discuss the point. Tosfos in particular discusses the point. When we say three amas, does that mean that's the actual height of a person from head to toe? Or do we mean that's only his height up to his shoulders, but when he goes into a mikveh, he displaces the water, and therefore you have the water covers the fourth ama, and therefore that covers his head as well. We have the famous two shiurim for the size of an amma, Rabbi Avraham Chaim Noah's and Machazon Ish's, that may relate to that, because Rabbi Avraham Chaim's amma of a foot and a half, a person is not 4.5 feet tall, your average person is a good deal taller than that, so that would fit better with the possibility that's only up to the shoulders, as opposed to the Chazon Ish's amma of 2 feet would fit a lot better with the idea that's the full height of the person head to toe. Whatever the case, the point is, so a mikveh is 3 cubic amas. So the Chacham calculated that 3 cubic amas equals 40 sa. So again, if we're saying that the Yamshel Shloimeh fit 150 of those, then 40 times 150 is 6,000 sa of water. Now, so the Gemara continues. Toni Rami Bar Yechezkel. So Rami Bar Yechezkel taught a braisa. Yamsha osa shloimeh sholosh amis tachtonis merubois ushtei amis elyonis agulois. The bottom three, it was five, the pasuk described, it was 10 amis from edge to edge in diameter, 30 amis in circumference again, and then the pasuk describes it was 5 amis tall. So Rami Bar Yechezkel was telling us of those 5 amas of height, the bottom 3 were square, or shtei amas or yonis agulos, and only the top 2 amas were round. So the Gemara says, Nehi de ipchole motis amrit. Now, granted, we can't say the other way around. Let's say that Rami Bar Yechezkel has a reason, as we're going to discuss in a minute, to say that not all of it was the same shape. Necessarily, he can't say that the top part was square. So the pasuk says that the rim of it was round. So obviously the top part of it had to be round. But maybe say that it was the same shape from bottom to top. Maybe say it was just a cylinder, and there was no square part at all. Now, there's a note, a parenthetical note in Rashi that says that the other, another meaning of chodr could be maybe it was only one amma square. The point being that, we know, fine, it can't have been the whole five ammas around in cross section, because since the pasuk says sfasai ogol, then that implies only near the rim was it round, someplace further down it was a different shape. And since also the pasukim describe over there, by the way, that you had, it was standing on top of 12 copper oxen, three pointing in each direction, then it's more logical to say that the bottom of it was square, and that way you had a base for it to rest on the backs of the oxen. So fine, but how do we know that it was two amos were, how do we know that three amos, that the bottom three amos was square? Maybe only one ana on the bottom was square, or maybe it was four and one. How do we know it was divided, as Rami by Yechezkel is saying? And the answer is, why Sakadayv? You can't think that way. Dichtiv, because the psukim describe, after it describes the size of it, it says Alpayim Bas Yochel. It says this mikveh of Shloimeh's was able to hold 2,000 bas. Now, what is a bas? Bas kana havi sholosh sin. A bas is a measure equal to 3 sa. Dichtiv maser abas min akur. As we find Yechezkel describing that the miser of a kur is a bas. So a kur is a measurement that the chachamim still used in their times, which is equal to 30 saw. So miser of it then would be 3 saw, and Yechezkel calls it a bas. So we see that a bas is a measurement equal to 3 saw. So therefore it comes out that the total volume of the mikveh, if it was 2,000 bas, if a bas is 3 sa, then the total volume of water that it could hold is 6,000 sa, because the 2,000 times 3. So the Gemara digresses, the Gemara continues, it's not brought here in any active, to explain the exact calculation. When we have the bottom three amas of it are square. So you have a box 5 by 5 by 3 amas, which would be 75 square amas. And on top of it, you have a cylinder, which is two amas tall, then you get the total you get is 150, is the equivalent of 150 mikvahs. The Gemara makes the whole calculation. So in other words, the question was also, before the Tosfos explains, that part of the Gemara's question was that, again, where is Rami Bar Yechezkel getting the chlal, or where did the original Braisa that we quoted, the Reb Chiya's Braisa, where did it get that it fit 150 mikvahs, such that we have to say it was the shape that Rami Bar Yechezkel was describing? And the answer is because 150 mikvahs is the equivalent of the 2,000 bas that it says in the pasuk. Okay. So then the Gemara asks at the end of the whole discussion, a different pasuk in Divrei Yomim, where it also describes this Yam Shel Shloimeh, there it says that it could fit 3,000 bas. So what is it, 2,000 or 3,000? So the answer is Ahuli Gudsha. What that would mean is, if you were to fill the Yam Shel Shloimeh with something solid rather than liquid, and you would have a heap at the top, then you would have that it could fit an extra 50%, because when you fill up a container with flour or something like that, so you have a heap at the top, and that heap would be equal in volume to half of the contents of the actual keli itself. Rashi points out in the Gemara that, of course, that's not necessary. So Amar Abayis. Abayis says Shema Min Ahay Gudsha Tofa Habachola. You see from that, when you make a heaping measure in a keli, then the heap is going to be one third of the total, which is one half of the amount that's in the keli itself. So Rashi in the Gemara points out, of course, that's going to depend on the shape of the keli. You were talking about a keli that's made in the proportions of the Yam Shel Shloimeh, where the height of it, where it's square or round, and the height of it is exactly half of the diameter. There is, in fact, interestingly, there was a rav a couple of hundred years back by the name of Rav Shlomo of Chelma. He wrote a famous pirush on a very, very famous pirush on the Rambam called Merkevas HaMishnah. So he has also in the back of the Sefer, he has a discussion of a number of mathematical issues in Gemara and in Halacha. It's called Breichas B'cheshven. There was a Yid in Muncie about 30 years ago who adapted into English, who adapted some of those essays into English and published them. Anyway. So one of his essays over there deals with an issue similar to this, where you have a container of this size and you have dinim. You can have dinim as far as bitul b'shishim. When can we say that the volume of the actual contents of the container will be more than 60 times the volume of the walls of the container, such that if the walls contain shayfos or basal b'chalav or whatever, then it can be bitul in the food that you cooked in. And he goes through a very elaborate thing over there discussing the same kind of thing also that he describes, that when you have a case found, maybe found by experiment, by experiment and by analyzing it mathematically, that the same kind of thing. When you have a KD that's exactly half the, where the height is exactly half the width, then that's the most ideal in terms of having the greatest volume for the smallest amount of material to make the container, and therefore you have a much better chance of bittul b'shishim in a case like that. So here, in a similar vein, the Gemara is saying that will hold the largest amount of heat. And the Gemara goes on to say the Gemara goes on to bring a proof from a Mishnah and the Halachas of Tumah V'Tahara, where we see that concept also, that something that could hold, for example, 40 sah of liquid will hold 60 sah of dry measure. So you have the same proportion over here, 2,000 bas to 3,000. At the end of the Perek, since it's been talking about the dinim, so they started talking about the dinim of Erev Chatzeres, so it mentions that when Jews are in an army camp fighting a Mochemes or a Shus, there are certain halachas that the Chachamim did not impose on them. In a Mochemes mitzvah, all the more so, but even in a Mochemes or a Shus, even in an optional war, for example, the ones that David HaMelech fought to expand the borders of Eretz Yisrael and scare the Goyim around so they wouldn't attack in the future or whatever, those kind of things are called Mochemes or a Shus. So the Mishnah mentions, and then here where we have a braisa that expands on it, of various halachas that are not applied to the soldiers in the army at a time like that. So Tana Rabbanan, we learn in a braisa, machna hayotzes for mochemes rishus, when an army camp is going out to a mochemes rishus, which Rashi explains basically means any of the wars after Yeshua's times, the ones in Yeshua's times, will mochemes mitzvah, they have to conquer Eretz Yisrael. But in general, the ones after that are usually mochemes rishus. Anyway. Mutarim begezel etzim yibeshim. One thing they're allowed to do. So the reason why it mentions it over here in the Mishnah is because it mentions that they're potter from Erev Chatzeres. Even though you have the takana of Erev Chatzeres, but they're potter in it in their army camp. But here it mentions also mutarim begezel etzim yibeshim. They're allowed to steal or to requisition for army purposes dry wood for firewood or whatever. Rashi points out all the more so if it's wet wood, where then the owner can't even use it yet. But even if it's dry, the owner has been keeping it for a while and plans to use it for firewood. If the army needs it when they're foraging for supplies, then they can take it. Rabbi Yehuda ben Tema says also the army can camp wherever they want, even on private property. Over Mokum Shanair Rogim, Sham Nikbarim, and wherever a person is killed, and wherever a Yid is killed in battle over there, he's buried over there, rather than, in other words, they don't have to take him someplace else to bury him. But the Gemara deals with the point, usually we say, anyway, mes mitzvah konam akoyimah, but in this case, even if a person is not a mes mitzvah, even if there are people available to bury him over there, they're entitled to bury him there on the battlefield, the point is, whoever's land it was might protest and say, what do you mean? Then you're putting this land off limits to me, because there's going to be a caver in it. We tell him tough luck. So then at the end of the Perek, it mentions over there about it mentions a little bit about dinim of Erev Tchumin. So the Gemara says, Toni Rabchia loikin al Erev Tchumin dvar Torah. A person would get malchus min haTorah for being over on Erev Tchumin, but for walking outside the Tchumin. Maskifle Rabbi Yochanan. So Rabbi Yochanan says, what do you mean? Bechi loikin al lav shabaal? Where do we learn the concept of the tchum? Because the pasuk says, "Al yetsa ish mimakoyme bayemashvi." Nobody should go out of their place on Shabbos. And later on in the Masechta, the Gemara explains that refers to the tchum. So Rabbi Yonasan asks, how do you have a malchus for a lav that's expressed with the word al? Lavim in the Torah are usually expressed as loy sisa, loy sirtzach, etc. Al is usually not. In fact, the Rambam mentions in the Shoshim to Sefer HaMitzvahs that in Lashon Kodesh, he says a lot of times you have the word loy can be a statement do not, but it can also be a statement it is not. And the same thing with al. So sometimes, for example, when the Torah says loy such and such, it doesn't mean do not do such and such. It means such and such is not applicable or whatever. So Rabbi Yonason is arguing that the word al is similar to that. It doesn't necessarily mean don't do. It may mean it's not to be done or whatever, but it's not necessarily a lav that a person would get malchus for. So Maskef Rav Acha Vayakov. So Rav Acha Vayakov asked them that. What do you mean? Elo me'ata b'chtiv al tifnu ala oivus. The pasuk says, "Don't turn to the oiv to oiv magic," which means not don't do it yourself. That's a different issue in the Torah. It means that you shouldn't be a customer. You shouldn't be a client of a person who practices oiv. Tosfos points out, first of all, now that might on the face of it be a lav she'ein b'maisa. You're just going over to the oiv person, like Shaul did, for example, and telling him, do such and such. So either we could say this Gemara, so either Rav Acha bar Yaakov follows the opinion that a person could get malchus for such a lav, or he would say, akimas sfasim, having maisa, moving his lips is considered a maisa for this purpose. So Rav Acha bar Yaakov says, so that lav, hochi nami deloy loki, are you going to tell me a person wouldn't get malchus for that? Of course a person gets malchus for that. The Baal Oiv himself is Chayiv Skila, and the client is Chayiv Malchus. So therefore, so that can't be what Rabbi Yonason meant. So rather, Rabbi Yonason Hochi Kokashalai. So no, Rabbi Yonason's question was not based on whether it says Al or Loi. His question was, V'chi Loikin Al Lav Shal Shvisa, or Lav Shal Nitin Laz, Horas Nisa Space there, V'chi Loikin Al Lav Shal Shvisa, how do you get Malchus for the Lav of failing to rest on Shabbos and going outside the Tchum? On the face of it, Lav Shal Nitin Laz, Horas Nisa Space there, isn't it a Lav that involves Nisa Space there? Because, Rashi explains, the word al yotze ish mevekoimo can also be understood as al yotze ish mevekoimo, that a person should not carry out from his place on Shabbos. That is where we learn, that's one of the places where we learn the concept of carrying from Rishus to Rishus is also on Shabbos. So therefore, now, and that involves Mrs. Faison. A person carries outdoors on Shabbos, he's going to be chayiv skila. So therefore, and the rule is, v'chol lav shenitin lazhoras misas beistin, en loikin olav. The rule is, when you have a lav that involves misas beistin, so then a person wouldn't get malchus for it. In other words, what if, for example, so what if they didn't give him hasra for misa? Of course, a person needs hasra in order to be chayiv misa. They have to tell him, you should know, this action is going to make you chayiv misa, is going to make you chayiv such and such a misa, and he says, I don't care, I'm doing it anyway. What if they don't tell him misa? What if they tell him that if you do such and such, you're going to be chayiv malchus? Sort of Yonason is saying that a person is even if he is over on that, even if he says, I don't care, I'm doing it anyway, he's not getting malchus. The punishment for Chilul Shabbos, b'mezid, the only punishment for it is Mrs. Faison, Skila. There's no malchus ever possible. So that being the case then, so it's not a matter of the fact that it says owl versus loy, but given that al yetze ishmi mekoimai includes a Mrs. Faison, then how are we using it to say that a person wouldn't get malchus for going outside the Torah? The answer is Amar Avashi Miksiv Al Yotzi. The fact is, the pasuk does not say Al Yotzi. Al Yotzi Miksiv. It says you shouldn't go out. So therefore, we're not learning from it the concept of Itzal Mirushus Lushus. We're learning from that pasuk the concept of going outside the Tchum on Shabbos. And therefore, yes, Reb Chiya can say that a person gets malchus for doing that. Now, so you end up actually with a machloek. First of all, you have the opinion of Reb Akiva in a Mishnah in Sota, who says that the concept of a tchum of 2,000 amos is in fact d'oraisa. All the other chachamim disagree with him and say that no, it's only d'rabbanan. Now the Rambam, uniquely among the Rishonim, holds within that even the other chachamim agree, and he bases himself among others on this Gemara, that even the other chachamim would agree that there is a tchum that's mid'oraisa, but a tchum of 24,000 amos, 12 mil. Because that was the size of Machne Yisrael. If we're learning over here, our Yetzi Ishmael Kaimel, nobody should go outside Machne Yisrael to collect mon, well then that means 12 mil. So therefore, so according to him, the vote would be, the other Chachamim would hold that there's a Tchum D'oraisa of 12 mil, and a person would get Malchus for going outside it, as the Gemara is saying over here. Rav Akiva held that Mid'oraisa at 2,000 amos. The other Chachamim said that no, Mid'rabbanan, it was reduced down to 2,000 amos. If a person goes outside that Tchum, he's going to get Malchus Maudus, but he's not going to get Malchus D'oraisa unless he goes outside 12 mil. Most of the other Rishonim disagree with the Rambam on that and say no. Only according to Rabbi Akiva is Tchum and D'oraisa. According to everybody else, Tchum is strictly D'rabbanan, 12, 1 mil, 12 mil, doesn't matter. And the Gemara we're talking about over here, learning from Al Yetze, would be only according to Rav Chiya, though everybody else would say that it's an asmachta. Okay. Oysin pasin perak sheni. The beginning of the parak talks about a concept. Now, in general, when you have mechitzis, you usually have to have something called oymen meruba al aporet. So it's talking about at the end of the first parak, you're making a mechitzah. You have to have this more area that's enclosed than unenclosed. You can't have, for example, a part of a wall, then a large gap, and then another part of the wall. That usually doesn't work. However, the Mishnah starts saying at the beginning of the parak that the Chachamim made a special heter for wells in Eretz Yisrael, because the Oilo Regal used them on their way to Yerushalayim for themselves and their animals to get water, so therefore, it would be hard to put actual mechitzas around them, so the Chacham allowed you to set up what's called the Mishnah Diyumdin, which is the L-shaped holes around the four corners, so that way, at least you look, you have sort of the semblance of four walls, and on a Daraisa level, that's good enough, and therefore the Chachamim allowed it in this case. So the word Diyumad itself, the word diu is diu, joy, whatever, is a Greek prefix that means two. In English, we have also dioxide, dilemma, and various other words like that that come. The word di is the Greek word for two, and so diu mud is short for diu amud, which means a double pole, because it's made like an L-shaped piece with two poles, one at 90 degrees to the other. So now the Gemara, that leads the Gemara into discussing various other places where we find this prefix du, meaning with the same meaning of two. And now the Gemara brings one that brings into a long piece of Agadah. Amar Rav Yirmiyah ben Elazar, du parts upon him hoyla l'Adamirishin. Adamirishin had a double form of the face. In other words, when Adam was first created, he and Chava were joined together back to back. Like Siamese twins. Shenema, as the positive says, Ocher v'kedem sartoni, Kapitel Kuflamet Tes of Tillim, which was the beginning, that kapitel was originally composed by Odomirish and later on adapted by David, to use the expression, Hashem, you created me behind and in front. So that means, in other words, on behind and in front, each of them, Sarta, you made me upon. The point is, in other words, if it just meant in the simple sense that Hashem created the front and the back, first of all, there would be no reason to say that. Of course, Hashem created the whole body. And second of all, at least Ponim should be put first before Ocher. So therefore, it's meant to imply that. So now the pasuk says, "Vayivin Hashem alekimas atzela." Eventually, it says that Hashem put Adam to sleep and took the tzela that he took out of Adam and made it into Chava. So what was this tzela? We had this whole discussion in Brachos as well. Rav and Shmuel. So Rav and Shmuel argue what the tzela was. Chadam a parzu for chadam a zon. One says, like we just said, that it was a complete human form, which Hashem then cut apart from Adam. And the other one is that it was a zonov. Zonov literally means a tail, but sometimes Rishonim point out that sometimes it just means an extra appendage, an extra part that's not necessary for the body. For example, when it says about Vashti, that Gabriel put a zonov on her, you know, like this, the kids always, you know, they always think it means literally a tail, like an animal. Doesn't necessarily, it just means some extra thing that doesn't belong on her body. Could even be, for example, just that she gained a few extra pounds and decided, you know, she doesn't look attractive enough to go out in public, whatever. Anyway.
That whole thing with the rib is not...
So that's the thing. So the Medrash actually, the word Selah does sometimes mean a rib. The Medrash actually takes the view that the word Selah here does mean a rib, and it says a whole explanation that Hashem was considering what part of the body to create Chava from, and eventually decided that the rib, because it's covered by a person's clothes, even when a person stands without clothes, it's usually covered with their arm, and therefore that'll help that a woman will have the characteristic of tzniyus. Even though, according to that, though, you could still say that it fits with the understanding over here of Zonov, because again, Zonov could mean, for example, it was an extra rib. Hashem may have created Adam, for example, to begin with an extra rib, which is now available to be taken out and give to Chava. I mean, for that matter, you could say it wasn't an extra rib, and from then on, Adam is missing a rib. So, a person can be missing a leg, and he still has kids with two healthy legs, but. Anyway, but yeah, that medrash that says that it was a rib, or Gemara over here that's saying pirates of Horzanov, maybe it fits with it, maybe not. Anyway, so two opinions what was used to create Chava. The Maharal, by the way, has an explanation. We talked about this when we learned this in Brachos. The opinion that says Pautzuf holds that a woman has the same, is co-equal in importance to a man in terms of her relationship with Hashem, as opposed to the opinion of Zonov would say that it's more. The man is the primary one, and she's sort of secondary and tuple to him. Maybe don't tell this over to your wives, but that's how the Maharal explains according to the opinion of Zonov. Anyway. So the Gemara says, "Bishleim lamanda amar paritzuf." Well, it's easy to understand according to the opinion that it was paritzuf, that it was a full human figure. Hainu the ksev ocher b'kedem sajani. That explains the pasuk from Kapitel Kufan the test that we just quoted. That he's saying that Hashem created the back and the front. El lamanda amar zonav. But if you say that it was only a zonav in the first place, my ocher b'kedem sajani, then what is the import of this pasuk? And the answer is, according to that, that would be Kedir Rav Ami. That we would have to understand the way Rav Ami understands the pasuk. The Amar Rav Ami, it means Ocho, the Ma'is of Bereshis, the Kedim of Koronis. Has nothing to do with the actual creation of Adam's body. It means that Adam was the last thing to be created in Ma'is of Bereshis, and he was the first one to be punished. Meaning, in other words, that the Gemara is going to ask where do we find that Adam was the first to be punished, but that's what it would mean. In other words, it was Ochel the Ma'is Bereishis for reasons that the Gemara explains in Sanhedrin, among other things. This way, a person won't be a Baal Gaiva. This way, everything is ready for him. Like you first set up the party, and then you invite the guest of honor, and so on and so forth. And Kedem the Puranas, because again, the idea is that the humanity is crown of what Hashem created, the jewel of what Hashem created in the world, and therefore if he messes up, if he sins, then the whole world goes down with him. But then he goes first. So the Gemara asks, "Bishlema ocher l'maisa b'reishis." Okay, I understand what it means. Ocher means as far as maisa b'reishis. Dele ivri on Ma'ale Shabbos, because Adam was only created on Erev Shabbos, and everything else had been created. El v'kedem l'poronis ma'ihi. What do we mean that Adam was first as far as punishment? Do you mean as far as the curses that the various participants in the Chetei Tadas got? No. All of a sudden, Skal Adam. On the contrary, the Nachash got his curse first, then Chaba, then Adam. So he wasn't Kedem Lepuranus. No, what we mean is that Adam and humanity in general was the first when it came to the Mabel. Hashem wiped out everything that was all creatures that were on the face of the earth. From man to beast. So in other words, the people were destroyed first, and that's what we mean the Kedem of Arams. And the idea would be, because again, you know, the world was created for the sake of there being people in it to accomplish, and if they're not going to, then they leave the world first, and then everything else follows. Okay, so the Gemara continues. B'shleim l'manda omer paritzuf. Again, according to the opinion that Adam and Chava were created as two paritzufim joined back to back, kindly by yitzer trein yudin. That explains why when Adam is created, you have the word vayitzer with two yuds. So therefore, it means that there were two vayitzer maloshen tzura. So it means there were two tzuras back to back. But if you say that it was only a zonav, then what's the vayitzer? There wasn't a whole separate yitzira. And the answer is Kedir Shimon Ben Pazi. Then we would have to understand the word vayitzer as Reb Shimon Ben Pazi does. The Amr of Shimon Ben Pazi, we darshan from that word. Oili mi yitzri, oili mi yotzri. Woe from my yitzer and woe from my creator. In other words, if I try to do good, then my yitzer harasses me to not do that. And if I do bad, then Hashem calls me to account. So therefore, vayitzer, a person is trapped between a rock and a hard place in terms of what should I do as far as how should I operate in the world in such a way that I'll be free from the Yetzer Hara, but also on good terms with Hashem. So according to that, that's what we learn that from the word vayitzer. In fact, Rashi explains in Brachas, where we have this as well, that vayitzer, the word vayitzer, we break down vayitzer. So woe from the Yetzer and also vayitzer and woe from the Creator if you don't follow him. Okay, we'll continue tomorrow. That's the end. Yom Mashiach Ha'Geula, Beis Tammuz now. During the time, the Rebbe gave a sifa in early Tovshin Nun Aleph, so the end of 1990. Around that time, the UN had been gathering together and doing yet another one of their resolutions, one of these Rog Shugoyim Goyim Umim Yehagurik. They're making noise and they're talking vanity and then claim about the Jewish people listing at them that that you stole the land of Eretz Yisrael, not just as far as specific areas like Azar or Shemron, but in general about Yehuda, including Yerushalayim, the capital of Eretz Yisrael, where everybody knows, as Rashi says, at the beginning of the Torah, the whole world belongs to Hashem, and he created it and gave it away to whoever he wants, and he gave it to us. So therefore, the Rebbe went on to say, so don't be despoiled, don't be so worried about this rog shugoyim l'um yegu, because as the pasuk says, it's only rik, it's only spit, it's only vanity, it's empty stuff. Medrash Tehillim says, and Kol Rigushim L'Rit. All of their noise, all of their tumult, is all for nothing. Because, as the next verse continues, Yoshev Hashemayim Yisrael, Hashem sits in heaven and he laughs at them. Hashem Yilag Loma, Hashem mocks them. So therefore, we Jewish people stand with our full strength, knowing, as Rashi tells us, that the whole world belongs to Hashem, and he created the world, and he gave it to us. And even more than that, in fact, this Rav Shul Goyim, or Umniyagu itself, is one of the simonim of the Ge'ula. Rashi mentions on the Pasuk in Tehillim over there, that the Chazal, Darshan, that whole capital, on the simple sense, Rashi explains that it was referring to the Plishtim going and fighting against David, but Chazal explains that it also refers to the Goyim gathering together to try to fight against Mashiach. So therefore, so we see this Rav Shul Goyim, or Umniyagu, is the beginning of the process of Ge'ula. Halacha, finishing off the halachas of Einas Dvarim and Gnevis Das, you're not allowed to invite somebody to come eat by you when you know he's not going to listen. Now, the Alter Rebbe qualifies that. He says you can't plead with him over and over, but you could once or twice tell him, come eat with me. That would be a kabbadika thing that you want to honor him, but if he doesn't want to, and you know that he's not the type to accept such an invitation, then don't keep pestering him. That already would be Einas Dvarim. Another example would be you can't give him a present if you know he's not going to accept it. Other kinds of things, which is echad b'peh echad b'lev. You're making the offer, but you're not sincere about it. You know that you're not going to have to follow through because the guy's not going to accept it. Don't do that. That kind of thing. Piv b'lev shoven. A person has to have a sfas emes v'ruach nochen b'lev talk.